Greetings, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Running Into the Fog with the Johnson Brothers. Eric, how are you doing today?
I'm amazing, Derek. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. What is it? April 12th, 2023. And we are on episode 65.
Hey, you found our... it.
I did. Found it. Thanks, Joe. Joe saved me, bailed me out in the background. Episode 65 already.
Joe would know for sure.
And we have a really smart, hardworking, I'm going to even maybe use the word courageous young man coming on the podcast today. His name is Drago. Drago, welcome.
Hello, everybody. Thank you very much, Derek, for those kind words, and I'm very excited to be here with you guys.
You're courageous for a number of reasons. The one I'll point to is the fact that you'd come on here, your very first podcast ever, from what I understand, with two guys who believe in the completely unscripted pathway to podcasting. And that does require a certain amount of courage, believe it or not. So thank you for your patience and your willingness to kind of stare into the void and see what stares back at you.
Well, no problem. The last time we met, you guys just made it easier for me to be here. So I really like you guys, and I got no problem with being here with you.
Awesome. So let's go back in time a little bit, Drago. And when we have a guest on, especially one of a background like yours, the audience will get to know about today. I know just enough to be dangerous about your background, and I find it highly interesting. Let's go back to back many years, maybe to your childhood and various childhood experiences. Obviously, you're a student working on your master's degree at Gannon University out in Erie now. But take us through some of those moments from your more youthful days, you know, that sort of started to set the stage for what you'd be doing today. How far does that go back, you know, where you can say, hey, something happened to me in my life at X point in time, you know, that contributed heavily to getting me to where I am today?
Well, it started from a really young age. When I was about 10 years old, or 11, the practices started, water polo practices, started getting harder and harder. So it quickly turned into something professional. At age 15, 16, I was a professional water polo player in Serbia, and a lot of things come with that. A lot of missed parties, birthdays, family occasions, and all of that is a part of the reason where I'm at today. Having to give up those things you like the most as a kid were probably the reason what elevated me to be a good as good water polo player as I am today, and also as a knowledgeable person as I am today.
Well, we've never yet had a chance to play water polo against one another. Maybe that will be a future episode of Running Into the Fog. That might be entertaining for everyone.
I would pay to see that.
That'll be very interesting.
Pay-per-view event.
Well, we'll set that on the sideline just for the moment. Eric, what questions do you have for Drago as we get this interview underway?
Well, you know, Drago, first of all, you're from Serbia. And water polo in Serbia is at a whole different level than in most places around the world. Now, I'll confess that when I was on the rowing team at Madison, we used to play intramural soccer against other athletic department teams. And obviously the men's soccer team was typically better than everybody else. But the only other team that would beat the men's rowing team at soccer was the water polo team, and all because of their cardio. And knowing that this is an exceedingly cardiovascular intensive sport, it's also a contact sport. And I don't know that a lot of people know that. Tell us a little bit about water polo. And you know, obviously you started out as a teenager, as a professional doing this, you know, for money. And then came to the United States really to study at the university level and also to compete. Tell us about that transition from professional sort of in your teenage years to now, you know, collegiate athlete.
So as I said earlier, at about 15 or 16 year old, the competitions really start to feel professional. And by the time you hit 16, since I was in one of the best water polo clubs in the world called Partizan, once you hit that age of 15, 16, 17, they start to push you towards the professional league because the whole point of the program is to make future Olympians. The group of 15 of us, who were all 16 at a time, had to sign a contract to play professionally for no money because the club was very poor. But everything else about it was real. The practices were long, the pressure was there, and we were always going for the win, no matter how much younger we are than the guys in front of us. And there was a big change at that age. It was scary, to be honest, most of the times, because you had a guy in front of you who is probably twice your age and has kids. And on the other hand, you're 16, but you're still going for the win. So the reason of somebody being older was never truly the reason for us to back down. So by that time, it became clear to me that I do not want to be a professional water polo player because the commitment wasn't worth the financial reward. Water polo is not a very popular sport. It does not have nearly as many viewers as baseball, basketball, football, and soccer. And for that reason, the salaries are a lot lower. I think the average salary of a top-end player is somewhere around 100,000 euros, which then pushes the bar way lower for everybody that's not near that level. So after I recognized that I most likely won't make enough money by playing water polo, I decided... education and career opportunities were always the number one thing for me, but it was always a split decision because I did not know what to do because of how good I was at water polo, but I also wanted to focus on education and career opportunities. So the fact that the salaries are not as high actually helped me make my decision better. So during that transition, the first time I came to US was in 2017. As a 17-year-old, I came to Pittsburgh as a foreign exchange student. And in order to come there, I had to give up water polo because it is known in my country as soon as you leave to play water polo in college, that means you are not 100% in the plans of the Serbian national team automatically. I was well aware that by going into US, I will lose the opportunity of becoming a top-end national team player, which was fine to me again because of the financial rewards and also because of my size. It would be a lot harder for me to get to that level with my size than probably some other guys that are taller and bigger. The reason why I really came to America is education and career opportunities. But the reason I came to high school is to see first if I liked living in America, and second, to find a college that is going to pay me a full scholarship. There was a lot of stress involved in looking for a college because it had to be full ride or at least a big amount of scholarship that would cover at least 90% of the bills, which I couldn't cover otherwise. So there were really a few choices, but luckily, by playing water polo for the high school, Gann University coaches, water polo coaches were able to recognize me, after which I was invited for a scrimmage. And just after that first scrimmage, they were really happy with what they've seen and almost instantly offered me what I was looking for, which was really a tremendous moment in my life because I had to go through so many hard things to get to that point where I'm finally going to be accepted by a college for the full scholarship. And nowadays, just by talking to other athletes and to other water polo players, I was well aware of how hard it is to get because some D school, D2 schools, as Gannon is, they have limited amounts of scholarship. And in order for you to really get a full one, you would really have to contribute big time to your team, because the money they're giving me probably matches the money they're giving to 5, 6, or 7 other student athletes collectively. So again, there was a pressure around that, which was coming from the inside. There was no pressure from Gannon telling me, hey, we gave you a full ride, now you have to perform. But I always saw it, you know, professionally, if these people put that much trust in me, now I got to show off and prove them that they made a good decision. Luckily for me, everything happened. Everything happened well. I'm really excited I ended up here. And to be honest, even if I received an offer from a D1 school, I probably wouldn't have taken it, because the focus is now on education and career. D1 playing water polo would be 2 practices a day. It is not something I'm looking for. I wanted to play water polo here to stay in shape, to have fun. But as far as my professional goals go, I've met them all. When I played for the Serbian national team at age 16, that was really the top point of my career.
That's awesome. And, you know, I can't resist, while you were talking, I found your doppelganger out there on the internet, Drago. And if that water polo thing doesn't work out, I think you could be Jason Statham's stuntman and probably stand in for him. But I'll turn it back to Derek here. I'm sure Derek's got a question ready for you based on the fact that George thinks that you might not fare so well in the water polo. What would you call that? Is it a one-on-one when it's two dudes?
It is a little bit of wrestling, more swimming. A lot of things happen underwater which you can't see. So yeah, there's a lot that unfortunately the viewers aren't able to see, which I think harms the sport.
Well, Derek's doppelganger is John Malkovich. So if you wonder if John Malkovich could take on Jason Statham, that's the real question. That's probably a similar matchup.
I have a feeling Statham would athletically outcompete Malkovich, but Malkovich might incorporate some dirty tactics to at least keep the playing field somewhat level.
Guile.
I'm not saying I would play that way. But what you were saying about kind of looking at your experiences as a 15, 16 year old, always playing up, you know, playing up to guys that were older than you, you know, as a head nod, as I put into the chat, to all younger brothers out there, of which I happen to be one, you know, you either have the opportunity to show up and show what you're made of, or you take your ball and you go home. And it sounds like in your case, Drago, you were forced at a young age to show up, compete with, you know, like men in the sport. It wasn't a boys' sport anymore. It was a men on men sort of thing. And for that, I'm sure it was both intimidating and very difficult, but I'm sure there was a huge degree of growth that you experienced just by having to be forced to go through it.
Definitely.
And it got you ready for that opportunity to gain the full scholarship at Gannon that was also so rare to be handed out to a single player in that regard. Trying to think of other, so you're in Gannon, Gannon's MBA program at the moment.
MBA program in analytics, business analytics.
But you've already graduated with an undergrad in finance, do I have that correct?
Correct. May 2022, I graduated with major in finance and a minor in accounting. And currently, I'm a part of the accelerated MBA program, where I'll be graduating from this May.
Okay. So on the weekends, safe to say, you don't necessarily sit around and wonder what to do. You crack open the books and get after it a little bit.
Yeah, the job I do here at Gannon for the Beehive is online, and it really gives me a lot of freedom to work whenever I want to. So it would usually happen on weekends because I do school stuff over the week and try to work out. So the weekends would mostly be work.
Yeah. So over the past few years in particular, you've done some work, you know, for Aurora and different Aurora clients. We only just had a first opportunity to meet face-to-face here a few weeks ago. And I was just so impressed by your maturity and your kind of situational awareness of what you've been through in your life. And now it's starting to all make sense, you know, because you were forced into some of those situations that were probably highly uncomfortable as a teen. You've got this awareness about you that I think far transcends your age. At what, 22, 23 years old in that ballpark?
I agree. Yeah, it is exactly that point where you are not given the choice. We call it in Serbia, they put us in fire. That's the term we use as younger kids. They just put you in fire and they just see if you can cope with it. If you can't, then the younger guys come in and there's no space for waiting time. So for wasting time.
Yeah. Well, back when Eric and I were kids, we literally started a field on fire. We've talked about that on the podcast before. I know that's not what you mean in this context, but yeah, being put into the fire is, you know, a great way to learn. And it can be an intimidating aspect, but I think it's overall one of the best ways to be forced to learn something new. I don't know, Eric, what do you think about it all?
Well, I'm going to take a short 30 seconds here to remind people of a couple of format updates. This portion of the show is called Unthinkable. We're streaming on social on several channels. And if you want to stay here, you're going to have to visit openrecon.com and look for the little running into the fog icon that you can click on and then register to stay on the bridge. Because the second half of the hour is called Unspeakable. And we've got interlocutors peppered throughout our audience. And we hope you'll start volunteering here soon, interlocutors out there, experienced or first timers. We love first timers. They're going to come on and we're going to turn Drago over to them to conduct the back half of this interview today. And they've usually got different types of things that they ask that we don't ask and get into. But the final sort of administrative thing is I just collected a POAP from this first half of the show. This is the Unthinkable POAP you get by scanning that QR code that you see on the screen right now. And if you scan that QR code, you can redeem that for privileges later that we're working on right now, putting together. So definitely do that. Register over on openrecon.com and join us back here. Drago, I want to ask you before we run out of time on social, however, what do you plan to do with your career? What's your sort of hopes and dreams as an analytics grad student? You know, what do you hope to use that for? What type of work do you want to do? And obviously, you can't talk about the work you've done for our clients, but you can talk about the work that you want to do with your career going forward.
I would preferably want to be a competitive intelligence analyst, partly because that is what I'm currently doing for GAN University's Beehive. So here we do some research for startups, and I've conducted research for over 15 entrepreneurial clients and worked on their ideas. And I just have fun. I had a lot of fun working with them, and I also learned a lot by being here with my supervisors, and also having the access to talk to clients any day, just like I can do it now. So yeah, the competitive intelligence field is definitely my number one since I graduated in finance. Some finance jobs I would also be exploiting in near future, and I also had a minor in accounting, so something in between those three would be perfect.
And have I got it right that you are also, you're doing some stuff with the intelligence program at Gannon, is that, or and by if I got that wrong, because they're doing some money laundering work?
No, I'm not in that program. No.
Okay.
Yeah,
I know that sort of where their intelligence program is starting is in the whole sort of anti-money laundering, you know, capital flows, dark money types of stuff, which, you know, as you talked about accounting and finance, that's, you know, places where you might find some work.
Yeah, I agree.
I'd be curious, Drago, if you could share, what was it like, you know, the water polo element of your life set aside? What was it like to grow up in Serbia? Can you share what that what that was like for our listeners.
I think my childhood was awesome. I don't think it could have been better. The way in which Serbia is set up and most of Europe is that in each neighborhood, you have everything available within 15-minute walking distance. So all of your friends are within the walking distance, the grocery shops, the pharmacies, schools. So it is a different way of life where you don't necessarily need a car to go anywhere, which really helped at young ages, because here parents would have to take their kids pretty much anywhere where they want to hang out. Whereas in Serbia, I was just able to leave my building and ring on my friend's door and, hang out with him all day in a park, which was in front of my building. So my parents weren't worried most of the time where I was, because I was in the park in front of the building with my friends who were also living close by. The mix of that and the mix of water polo and all those friends I made collectively from the neighborhood school and water polo are definitely so valuable to me, and I'll never forget it.
Now, our audience, Drago, is above average when it comes to intelligence, as you might not be surprised to hear. And they could probably find Serbia on a map of Europe, most likely. Serbia used to be part of a country called Yugoslavia, if I'm not mistaken, and there was pretty serious civil war there a few years ago. Do you have any sort of recollection of that, or was that before your time? Did that affect
you? Before my time. What I know is that I was born in 1999, and that was the year Serbia was bombed by NATO. So I know that when my mom was in the hospital giving birth, I know the bombs were falling. So yeah, that's about it. But we were then Serbia and Montenegro up until 2006. And after 2006, we became just Serbia.
Perfect. So with regard to staying here in the United States, your plan is to stay here in the U.S.?
Yeah, my plan is definitely to stay here in the U.S. I really enjoyed my time learning and working here, and I wouldn't want to waste that by going to Serbia now. I would preferably want to get a job within the competitive intelligence field with a good company that is going to give me the opportunity to grow in the years ahead.
One of the things I noticed on our last visit to Erie, and we visited Gannon, we also visited Mercyhurst, was that a lot of the most talented students coming into the competitive intelligence world are foreign born. And there's a reason for that, not just inherent to the fact that you're a very talented man, but there's also a problem with them getting security clearance in the national security and law enforcement realm. And you're sort of, as a result, drawn over to the business world. Now, I don't get that vibe from you. I get that you wanted to do the business side of things from the get-go, but that's one of the things that I came away from Erie a few weeks ago with a new appreciation from, that most of the best talent, quite frankly, wasn't born here, that's in this world at the sort of start of your career, and that sort of professional readiness, you're fresh out of your grad school programs and you're ready to hit the ground running. I'm going to put your LinkedIn profile on screen here for a second before we lose our social folks, which, by the way, you're going to be saying goodbye in about 6 minutes, folks on social. So before we let you go, Drago Ljub Marjanovic, did I get that right?
Yeah, she did.
Very good. Reach out to Drago on LinkedIn, please. I'm sure you're interested in connecting with anybody who's watching this today, and would, if there's a job offer out there, that's how you reach him, I'm guessing.
Yep. I'll be open to the conversation, of course.
Perfect.
I think one of the other ways you can be inspirational to, whether it be today's audience or an audience that might ingest this podcast down the road, Drago, is share with us, you know, what some of the challenges are these days of being a college student.
Would you like me to talk about the international perspective of being a college student, or just in general?
I think the international aspect is one in which I know you're well informed. Maybe start there.
First of all, when just starting on college as an international student, you really have to realize that you have to go out there, you have to meet people, and you have to do new things. You have to keep an open mind, because most of the things you know that you brought from back home aren't the same here. And in order for you to just have a good time here, you have to adapt to the culture. And the easiest way you do that is by meeting new people and attending university. How should I call them? University meetings, or just plans for students to hang out, and like a coffee hour. Or I think in a week or something, we have a grad dinner for grad students here. So I would strongly advise all international students to go to those to meet new people. Other challenges are involved with job environment is what I'm witnessing now. It is not easy to find a job considering the regulations that are put in front of us internationals. We are given, after we finish college, internationals are given either a year or 3 years to work in the field of their major. So STEM students get a right to work for a company within their major for 3 years, while students in business get a right to work for 1 year without the employer having to sponsor them in terms of finances. After that time passes by, the employer would have to pay for a business visa, which costs somewhere around $6,000, which is sometimes an incentive for employers not to go further into the hiring process, because some might not have the practices already put in, some might not want to pay, and some might think that they can get a better candidate through just Buy American audience. So the main challenge is to find a job. To find a job in college that will going to give you some relevant experience that is going to ultimately make you be competitive when searching for that job. Because what I think now is if I did not have the 3 year work experience that I have now, I think I would stand way lower chance of getting a job, which is pretty low now, considering I've applied to so many and received only a couple responses back. So I think the main challenges are centered around culture and also finding a job after college.
If I may, I know just enough about the visa process, having through Aurora's activities sponsored a few people over the years. And here's where I think USCIS gets it wrong. And it speaks to the poster behind my right shoulder. And you and I in the lead up today's podcast talked about the look, and the look of Kobe, or the look of Jordan, or the look of some of these premier athletes. And sometimes you can be a premier athlete. It's just that you're not in a physical context. You're athletic in a very white collar professional world. So I'm going to draw that analogy over, and you need the look to be successful. You need to be able to stare into the void and know that when it stares back at you, you're not going to flinch. I think that the experience you had, especially as a young person playing up several levels in water polo, putting it all on the line to come to the U.S., play water polo in high school, you're at least the second half of your high school career, getting noticed by Gannon, getting a full scholarship. That to me speaks to quote unquote the look. And USCIS, when they're considering equivalent US-based citizens for a role, they don't know how to incorporate, the look or the difference of somebody that's been through those types of life experiences and why they're, sort of next level in comparison to somebody that on paper looks comparable to a US-based alternative. candidate, shall we say. And that's where I think that the whole H-1B visa process could be more streamlined. Yes, it introduces a qualitative element to the evaluation, but I think there needs to be one.
Also, what I see as another part of the problem, which I don't think the employers are directly involved in, is the general system of hiring new workers. There are nowadays, there are all these one-click applies and ATS systems that could be looking for just a couple of keywords within your resume. And unless you have those keywords in your resume, you're not going to be considered for the application. So that poses another question of, do I have to craft my resume differently for each application, which then again extends the time for application for each company. So there are a lot of job boards, there's a lot of opportunities out there, but I also think because those, because companies, big companies have so many applicants, their systems have to be well crafted to select the ones they want the most. So for that reason, there's some applicants that do not even get a chance to have a conversation and who might be worth it because of those ATS systems.
Really valid point. Eric, I know we're going to pivot. Go ahead.
And for those of you on social that wish you had a chance to talk with Drago today, go to openrecon.com and register and come back, because it's time to say goodbye. And we'll see you in 2 weeks, everybody on social. All you Russian bots out there, do svidaniya, svet robotov, russiskaya svet robotov. We'll see you next time.